Joanne Tall, an Oglala Lakota, living in the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, was 20 years old in 1973 when she participated in the American Indian Movement's occupation of the village of Wounded Knee. Tall angered that federal agents had dared to invade in an attempt to take over the Lakota homeland, feared she might have been killed at Wounded Knee. Huddled inside one of the few buildings in the settlement, Tall, along with other women and children, cringed as gunshots rang out around them. Wounded Knee, a sacred burial ground at Pine Ridge Reservation, had been the scene of a mass grave in 1890, and 300 Lakota people, mostly unarmed women and children, were shot by U.S. military. Indian leader Bigfoot and his band were traveling from the Standing Rock Reservation to the Pine Ridge Reservation. After disarming the Lakota, the cavalry took them to Wounded Knee. There, while soldiers were searching the Indians for any undiscovered weapons, a small scuffle broke out. The cavalrymen opened fire and continued shooting until every Indian lay dead. This bloodbath changed the lives of the Lakota dramatically. The repeated breaking of treaties in sequential years led to the loss of their homelands. After 1890, in addition to taking such much of the Indians' territory, the U.S. government suppressed the spiritual and cultural customs of the Lakota people.
Bury my heart at Wounded Knee. Listen, my brothers, listen to me. Bury my heart at Wounded Knee. They took my children and my wife from me, so bury my heart at Wounded Knee. My summer is over, the snow clouds come. The peace pipe is broken, I hear the war drum. The land is scarred by my brother's blood. The soldiers came like a sudden spring flood. They sat by our fires and promises made. They smoked our peace pipe, then made us their slave. Now as I lie here and wait for the end, our wigwams are empty, no more can I send. Don't take of their promises, but listen to me. They've killed all our people, we'll never be free. So bury my heart at Wounded Knee. Bury my heart at Wounded Knee.
Through her work with AIM, she learned that between 1972 and 1976, the Indian Health Service had sterilized 42% of all Indian women of childbearing age. This meant that almost every fertile Indian woman entering the IH hospital had undergone this procedure. Some Indian women quoted in the government's own reports finally verified the practice. Efforts to publicize the facts failed. It was only when AIM threatened to sue the government for $300 million in damages on behalf of the victims that the senator of South Dakota forced the government to put a moratorium on the program. For more than 20 years, Joanne Tall had dedicated herself not only to Indian rights, but to environmental activism. She is motivated by the Lakota Reservance for Nature, their worldwide rewards, Grandmother Earth, as having sustained her children throughout the millennia. To the Lakota, land cannot be owned by anyone, much less bought and sold. Tall has 8 children. She lives in the settlement of Porcupine on the Pine Ridge Reservation, site of the nation's poorest county. Materially poor all her life and now suffering rheumatoid arthritis, Tall nevertheless has never hesitated to challenge government, military, or corporate interests threatening Indian burial sites, reservations, human rights, and well-being. Honeywell, a weapons manufacturer, decided in 1987 to conduct nuclear missile tests in an ancient burial and ceremonial site in the beautiful Black Hill Canyon sacred to the Indians. Joanne Tall used her radio station, Indian-owned and operated, to spread the word among her people of the threatened discretion of their sacred canyon. She told the Honeywell representatives in no uncertain terms that the Indians would not yield on the issue and intended to win the fight. Whereupon Tall and 150 Lakota camped out for 3 months in the canyon, refusing to leave until Honeywell gave up its plan. Tall said that she had a vision during one of her ceremonies that symbolized 7 future generations, and she believed the missile testing would mean the beginning of the end for her people. In the absence of the environmental justice ethic, the communities of minority groups have all too often been literally dumped on. The waste industry found out that the Indian reservations, with their sovereign stature under tribal law, had fewer regulations controlling toxic waste than did land under the jurisdiction of state, country, or city governments. Therefore, in the late 1980s and early 1900s, they targeted 60 Indian communities for setting up toxic waste sites. The industry, under the disguise of economic development, began approaching poverty-stricken Indian tribes with promises of vast sums of money and many jobs in exchange for permitting toxic waste dumps on the reservations. Furthermore, they selected tribes where the language barrier prevented the Indians from fully understanding the dangers of such dumps. Those chosen had no words in their languages for hazard toxic chemicals like PCBs or dioxins. The proposed sites included a 5,000-acre landfill, an incinerator on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Tall helped organize the Indigenous Environmental Network, a coalition comprising more than 50 organizations. This coalition helped to educate and protect Native American people in both the United States and in Canada. Tall and her colleagues in AIM point out that although fewer than 500,000 Indians now live on reservations, the revenue from their land adds up more than $6 billion to the gross national product of the United States. Applying to the rules of capitalism fairly, American Indians ought to be among the wealthiest people in the world. But the federal government holds all Indian lands in trust, and it permits corporations to exploit their natural resources in exchange for only token realties. The Goldman Environmental Foundation selected Joanne Tall to receive one of its Global Environmental Hero Awards for 1993. Tall plays down her own achievements, pointing to the many other American Indian women activists. She says, "Indian women have a long record of resistance," and points out that Native history details women's roles as sustainers of the spirit and vitality of their culture.
Echoes of Wounded Knee. A woman lay on the ground about to die. She spoke, "My son, pass me by. Run, save yourself and your brother," was the plea of this dying mother. She had no place to run or go. She lay dying in the frozen snow. There on a wounded knee hill, her spirit's voice echoes still. As Indians bravely met their long bitter foe, 350 lay dead in the snow. Only the hills could hear their mothers weep as they embraced death's final sleep. In our hearts we will always remember that 29th day in cold December. Floating on wounded knees, cold air, forever their spirits' voices echo there. Wovoka, son of a mystic, while alone, had a vision all of his own. In his vision he could see return of old ways, living again free. The ghost dance started that 1890 year, and in the white soldiers it struck fear. In their coward hearts it wasn't surprising, they feared an all-out Indian uprising. The Indians wore magic shirts made by hand for protection against bullets of the white man. They ghost dance by night and day for return of the old ones and the old way. The magic shirts did not work, though, and they would soon die there in the snow. Most their children and widows of Native sons miraculously slaughtered by heavy Galton guns. Crying out, cold winds seize their words. Echoes of their cries can still be heard. This was white man's most horrible sin, the slaughter of innocent women and children. Under the cold, wintry December sky, Chief Bigfoot was the first to die. He was a proud and gentle soul. He died with his people in the wintry cold. This image through the winds of time cannot be erased from heart or mind. For every Indian heart there that died, their memory is locked to our souls inside. It's been written as a historical fact. Soldiers receive medals for this heinous act. Government men, from the very start, planned this murder of Indians' brave hearts. More than lives died there that day. A dream of freedom was taken away. Lying dead by a frozen Bear Gulch stream, dashed and destroyed was their dream. What about their descendants alive today, living in poverty with their pride stripped away? Does your heart spirit not care at the agony still suffered there? Where our many lives were lost and hearts bled, and so many sorrowful tears was shed, all across the lone wounded knee hill, echoes of their cries for freedom is heard still. Barbara La Barbera.
We would like to thank the following sources who aided us in the creation of our podcast. Thank you to Wounded Knee by Neil Waldman, Eyewitnesses at a Wounded Knee by Richard Jensen, Ellie Paul, and John Carter, and Women Pioneers for the Environment by Mary Jo Breton.